nation was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us.
You do?
We do. How are you, buddy? S&P Futures up 19 and a quarter, continuing the massive rally of yesterday. Dow Futures up 177, NASDAQ up 62. Because we had a huge, huge bounce back. I mean, we're talking about, major league numbers. Dow up 512, S&P futures up 58, NASDAQ futures up 194. The the manna from heaven, Kevin, is about to be turned back on, everybody thinks. Just one quarter point out of the Fed, half point, and all our problems are going to disappear. Wouldn't that be nice?
I'm guessing that announcement is as much about what won't happen as what will.
Just one quarter.
Not that anybody's expecting rates to go up, but if rates are going to go down a quarter, then they're not going up.
I hope, Kevin, as always, I hope that whatever it is that people think are going to happen actually does happen. But when you look at the environment of the last 9 years of the Fed pouring money into the system with, I'll use the term, slack in the economy, and we had this kind of creeping asset inflation in other places, nobody paid much attention to. But now we've got tariffs. We've got the PC number was up last month. They start doing the same thing again. Everybody who thinks that all of a sudden everything's going to be fine, the market's going to go flying back up. The market might actually go flying back up. If they think the economies around the world are all of a sudden going to be fine again, you know what? I can show you all kinds of places to read and situations. If every single time there was a problem in the world, if you just opened the floodgates and poured money at it, it was a solution. Do you think anybody would figure it out before now?
I think that's probably a great way to manage an economy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, it is.
Tried and true, you know, good form, good fundamentals, good, just really, really, you know, good foundations for how to grow an economy. What more do we want?
Well, I spent the last few days, you know, discussing the, I'll use the term antics of the State House in Illinois, even with our liberal producer, Mr. Matt Weber. And you know what, Kevin? I think our people get what they deserve. I'm in a grumpy mood about this. There's no talking to anybody. I mean, I said this whole concept that your job as a legislator is to find every possible weak spot in your population and go get that dime to spend it on God knows what without limit, without anything. Then you spend even more than that, and you back up debt, and then you have to go out and get more from people. I mean, this whole way of doing business is just flat out wrong. And it's the lies that are told are just constantly wrong. I mean, there's this gambling thing, and you know, I've loved to gamble since I was a kid, for God's sake. Notre Dame, I used to play poker two nights a week. But the point being is that this constant flood of new places, new licenses, new whatever, at some point it becomes a zero-sum game. You know, you can't, the next nickel, I mean, they're probably somewhere is a guy who refuses to get off his behind and go to the casino and probably doesn't do something else, doesn't do something else, that might spend, you know, $500 a week on sports betting. I'm sure that person's out there. And of course, it is the job of our legislator to find him and take that $500 from him. Because it's not about enjoyment of gambling. It's about getting the money from somebody. Because in their mind, I mean, you can say if sports betting was legal, I have a group together and, you know, you've got your inside track and I got this and I got that. And I mean, you and I might actually say we can beat the sports gambling. Like, if we really studied horses, you know, could we potentially be in a pari-mutuel system? I mean, you're beating the other idiots. You're not beating the state, right? I mean, that's what a pari-mutuel system does. And if you're 15% smarter than the rest of the world, and the state takes a 14% cut, could you beat the system? Maybe, to a certain extent. My stepfather was a very bright guy when it comes to this kind of stuff. He loved the track. There was a meet at Sportsman's, now meet used to be, there were five harness tracks. And a meet was the 6 weeks you were at that track. Like if you go down to the Kentucky Derby is in the midst of the Louisville meet, okay, because the horses are at Louisville for 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever it is, and then they'll go somewhere else. They're not always there. They're not always everywhere. So he went every, in the accountant that he was, he went to every single night, wrote down his parking, his two beers or whatever, how many, his hot dog, and at the end of the meet, he was up like $25 betting every single race. Now that is, I'm going to say that out of the 20,000 people I used to get at night at Sportsman's Park, there couldn't have been 10 other people that made that statement. So from the point of view of the legislator, you're grabbing money out of that group of people. You know, whether one person in there is smart enough, whether Matty Weber's smart enough to actually win on sports betting, which he may very well be, but if anybody could, he could. That's not the point. You know what I'm saying? The point is, for the at the end of the day, you got a winner, and you're gonna get whatever license fees. You're gonna get any kind of property tax to the place if there isn't a location. If people have, I mean, what do they mean by sports betting? Is there gonna be windows at casinos? Other people get to have windows? Are they going to be in the OTBs? Do you have to go to a racetrack to bet? Can you bet online? I mean, there isn't a detail anywhere. Just lob it out there. We're going to get this money from people. I just think I cringe. The thing that set me off on this, Kevin, I stopped in and I was up early on Saturday. We had a caulk a door, right? So I'm at the Home Depot at 7 o'clock. I pull into the gas station to get my coffee and, I see this guy spending $50 on the instant lottery tickets. He didn't have a winner. He walked out. I think that guy came hard to that $50. And I just, the more you see stuff like that, the more you're like, what the bleep are we doing?
Well, and I'm not opposed to gambling. I'm not opposed to the state having gambling. That's all fine, such as it is. But to make it as if it's some kind of economic benefit is another issue, because gambling tends to be more transfer than wealth creator.
Right, I'll get you.
And that's ultimately the problem. Is all we're doing here is we're transferring from a large group of bettors to a small group of winners, and all the while with the state skimming off its share of. Not its share, but its take, skimming off its take. And so, as an industry for investment, it's not going to do anything substantial for economic development in the state. It's just a way to try and squeeze some money out so they can get through next year. And that, we were talking about, the macro economy when at the open of the show. This is the same kind of thing. It's just a... illusory madness here.
Yeah.
And so now we have the title for today's show, Illusory Madness. It's not the same as the hard work of, bringing in industries that actually do create some wealth, that do, that where the employees and the consumers and, everybody, that there is some kind of effect that ripples through the economy.
Well,
the short-sightedness of it is probably what rankles me more than anything else.
Somehow, Kevin, there has to be I don't know what the limit is. I'm not smart enough to make the limit. But I know to go way back, all the Catholic churches, not all, but an awful lot of them, when I was real young, used to have bingo, right? So how much people made in bingo, God only knows. But I know my grandmother and every little old lady on earth loved to go to bingo on Friday night. You know what? And it's enjoyment. And I also know that the buses that go to Atlantic City or someplace from some little town in Pennsylvania, once a month, some people get on there. I mean, my mom used to gamble all the time. It was no big deal. My mom brought her a couple hundred bucks with her, which she had, and she would never, you were never going to get another dime out of her, and if she knew a game was, I mean, I would trust my mom to gamble with thieves, pretty much. She was a terrific card player. But I'm sure the little old ladies, they go there once a month, they enjoy themselves, they have a lunch, they have a couple of cocktails, and if they lose their couple hundred, I don't have any problem with that, Kevin. I think people need to be able to enjoy
I don't either, Tom. And in that case, what they're really doing is it's a different version of passing the basket.
Yeah.
Right. You know, in that case, that's what it is, and it's just creating a social event around it. You know, no problem. No problem with that. Where you get the where it becomes an issue is when we think we're creating an industry here.
I'm going to say that without any rigorous, of course, why should I need any sort of rigorous study? Nobody else does, even if you're an elected official, right? On either side of the aisle, I'll lob one out there. I'm going to say that 90% of your lottery revenue comes from people in the 0 to 40% percentile, people who can't read the odds. And it's
probably,
a way,
yeah.
And it's a way to tax those people. I mean, the street people buy lottery tickets. The street people aren't going to go to a casino, right? I mean, I'm going to say that that some people in this city that probably are homeless have a higher tax rate than the rich because they spend half their money on the lottery, or 2/3 of it. And you know what? For you to be a legislator, and I work all day. I'm here doing the show. I'm in the office. It's not like I hang around lottery places. But on weekend, all I have to do is buy gas once, or, you know, buy gas or stop for a cup of coffee. For you not to notice that, you're a boob. How could you not notice it if you're a legislator going, wait a minute, is that what I just voted for? That guy doesn't have any money. He just bought 20 lottery tickets. I mean, how do you walk by it and not notice it?
I mean, well, they are noticing it, and they're saying, oh, good.
There's our 20 bucks.
There's the fix.
But at some point, Kevin, there needs to be, the term enough. But I think it, I mean, when people talk about, you know, progressive income tax rates and so forth, I don't have a problem to it to a point. But I honestly believe once you get past 25% or 30% of somebody's income, first of all, that should be more than enough to provide what society's providing. And I think that it becomes, I mean, I know I get arguments from this from anybody. I say, you know what? If what's his name? Lefty Mickelson. If he wins, I'm sure he's got accountants that help him out. But again, that's no excuse. If he wins a tournament on December 31st in California, what's his tax? Well, they just lowered the upper end a little bit on the federal side. But what's the guy going to pay? 60 some between the city and the state?
The point being, our guy Robert Raiola has always talked about the athlete, the jock taxes,
yeah.
and how they work. It's welcome to town. Enjoy your baseball series, by the way. Thank you.
Well, I mean, I think that there ought to be some semblance. I don't know how I think about that. As long as you don't have to pay twice, the idea that for years the Yankees had their network, right? They come in and they televise the game from Sox Park. Well, if I'm Reinsdorf, not that he needs me to tell him how to make money, I'm going to say, if I don't get half, you're not coming in. I mean, what the hell?
You can't. Well, but that's a little bit different because that is all structured in the
it is now
franchise agreement with Major League Baseball.
Well, it is now. But at one point,
has
one time.
Has it not been for a long time?
Well, but I think when it first started, I don't think it was. I don't think the Cubs gave anybody anything to go when they were on the Continental Broadcasting Network and Atlanta was second and the Yankees were third. Or I think way back in the day, he just went in and did it. That's why the small market teams never made any dough.
Okay. Well, they have since figured out how that would be allocated. And so that's taken care of. That's a little bit different issue. You know, the question is, if you go play a Super Bowl in California, is that a week's wages out of the out of the course of the season? And the season lasts what, 5 months? You know, 4 weeks a year. So basically, they get to tax 1/20 of your wages.
That's a good one because you're not
because
making
you spent
it.
A week in California for the Super Bowl.
Well, the question is, are you?
You know, is that reasonable, or is it? You know, should it be more like the you know, the performer, the musician who came in, did a concert, and left?
You know, I don't know how that one works. Whether you, yeah. It's got to be taxes on the concert itself, I would guess.
Well, there are on the concert itself. That is, you know, the promoter's tax burden. But then, you know, what does the performer earn from the show? And therefore, you know, that's taxable. But that's not how it happens with the Super Bowl. Is they take a portion of each athlete's income to the time they spend in the state,
we need Robert back because I'm going to say,
and they reach into their pockets to the tune of 13%.
I'm going to say they don't do that for the Super Bowl,
in California.
Kevin. I'm going to say they don't do it for the Super Bowl because the guys aren't getting paid.
Yeah, that hasn't stopped them. You have to have Robert Rayola back on.
Yeah,
he can explain.
Well, I know. He specifically said that they want the week or the 4 days or whatever it is that they settled on a week. That the week you're there, like during the, but I didn't know that they annualized the money.
You can actually lose money if you're highly paid enough. Because
right, but
what you get your game share is not going to cover your tax.
That's right in the Super Bowl, but
tell me how that makes sense.
Well, because they annualize your income.
Yes.
So if you make $50 million a year, essentially they're figuring in $1 million a week. But I thought Robert said because you only. It's only a 4 month season. Somehow you get to, I don't know. There was some way they settled on somewhere. I don't know because I know they.
I think it's state by state, but we need to get him back on. Because,
absolutely,
he's a great guest anyway.
But
so let's not have us try to work from our feeble memories and we'll just.
But here's what I want to see, Kevin, and I'm never going to see it. And if I had grandkids in their lifetime, I want a guy to be elected governor. And want him to walk up there on a podium and say, "These are all the taxes we've got. We're not only into your pockets, we're into your orifices." And I'm going to say that that's enough. And I don't want any time spent at this legislative session worrying about getting more money out of you. Let's figure out a way to spend it better. Because I really do believe it's enough. I honestly do. When you look at the Chicago situation and the idea of the, you know, the incredible property taxes in some areas. Your property taxes are more than your mortgage. Literally, they are. And now the sales tax. You've got the income tax, but you've got your payroll tax on the federal end. You've got, I mean, for God's sake, Kevin, I mean, at some point, God help you if you get a parking ticket. You know, what other state, if you appeal your parking ticket, does it double because you didn't pay during the time before they can talk to you in the appeal? This is stuff. This is not American. I got news for you. At some point, I honestly think that the average person is reaching a breaking point. Whether that doesn't mean they're going to go out and shoot people, I hope they don't. But I think they are. I mean, money wise, if your family's making $55,000, and you get a $5,000 raise this year, where are you now with this state stuff? I mean, the idea that when I couldn't believe it when I did my little thingy for the. If you're making minimum wage and you went and bought a car, how many hours you had to work just for the title fees and everything? These guys are doubling them. So the 60 hours are going to go to 100. And I mean, how much more? What do you feel like working someplace, slamming burgers for 100 hours just to pay for the state so you get a title and stuff for your car? I mean, why should you do that? That's a little too much, I think.
Yeah, so what are people going to do in response to that? They're either not going to work at all, and they're going to be collecting, you know, various forms of public aid. So they're net losers, and they're just making a rational decision, or they're going to leave the state, and actually the people who can pay the most taxes, the higher end of the income, are the ones who are most mobile, and therefore they're the ones who leave first.
Well, Connecticut's having a bigger drain than we are. We being Illinois. They're even people getting out of there even more so.
Yeah, it's madness. It's and there's a whole, you know, it's a death spiral for the state. And they're just running it right there for you. So
and I will say right, that the people who
I'm not there anymore, so you know it's not my problem, but it is my problem, you know, because yeah. I think sooner or later this is going to find its way into the federal budget when people start saying we have to get bailed out.
I think it will, and I also think that at some point,
and you can understand why someone would go, someone from a state that has been fiscally responsible might say, no damn way.
Well, plus I think the federal level, we're 2 years away from, maybe not even, we're 2 years away from them doing the same fight. They're saying we've got to get more revenue. And I see it coming. It's going to be, matter of fact, I was having a discussion with a interesting gentleman, but he's interesting guy to argue with, because he's absolutely on the opposite side of the page of me and just about everything. We're talking about the gas taxes. And I said, yeah, why are those doubling? He goes, well, we got a lot of bridges. I said, show me that the 19 cent a gallon that we're paying now goes for paying bridges. What do you mean? You don't think they spend that money? No, I don't. I think it's going to the general fund, and they don't do it. And he goes, why would you even think something like that? I said, I'll tell you why. Because they went on a barge tour, of all things. And for those that don't know, there's you know, a huge, it's a whole world of barge movement in the Illinois River, Mississippi River, I guess the Missouri River to some point, certainly the Ohio River. And it's like a whole society. People are on these barge things for, you know, 6 weeks in a row, and they get 6 weeks off. And it's a whole world. And the guy was telling me that we pay whatever cents a gallon for diesel forever. There hasn't been a new lock and dam on the Illinois River since the Depression. So if they decide to build a lock and dam in one spot, do they mean they got to double it? Where's the 85 years of dough, Kevin? I mean, if it turns out that every single dime that the gas tax has been paid in the last 30 years went to properly bid out infrastructure problem things, and that's stuffed in somebody's pocket. If that happened, and all of a sudden, because people are driving cars that get more mileage and so forth, the take on that is a little less, and you need to raise it up a little bit, and it hasn't gone up in 30 years. And will I be okay with that argument? The answer is yes. But nobody has put that assessment in front of me. I'm going to be Kevin O'Neill here. I want to see the numbers. I want to see them going there, or is it just yet another regressive tax? And once we get the money here, we'll do anything we damn well please with it. And I think the answer is B.
It's the latter. And, you know, let's do a different example. You remember in 2009 and 10, we did two stimulus bills. And it was, if I remember right, it was about $800 billion. And you remember President Obama's famous comment where he said, well, it turns out that shovel-ready wasn't as shovel-ready as we thought. But... Well, That doesn't mean we didn't spend it.
No, God, no.
Every last drop of that got spent, even though it wasn't spent on the projects that we were promised, you know, that were the reason for doing it in the first place. And, you know, that's just another example for you.
Well, and it gets to the point where how much, I mean, I understand why SP Futures up 1575, Dow Futures up 151. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Jack Silverman. We've got SP futures up 14, down a little bit from where they were, but still high. And NASDAQ futures up 44, so on top of a massive, I mean massive, 500 points is like about as big a day as you're going to get. Dow futures up 149. Well, I'll say that one of these days we'll probably have a 700 point day. Who knows? But over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 49.4%, FTSE up 31.4%, CAC round up 29.5%. So pretty much consistent across the board. To the upside there, Nikkei, wow, up 367, 1.8. Now these guys have been getting hammered.
20,776, so back up over 20,500, pretty strongly. Shanghai, down 86 cents, 28.61, that's, call that flat. Hang Seng up 133.5%. IMF is, indicating that the tariffs are having a big impact on China. I think they're probably having a pretty good impact here, or will soon, but evidently it's having a bigger impact on China as of right now. Oil down 44 cents, 53.04. Brent down 16 cents, 61.81. That spread is now, $8.77. Natural gas 240 down again, another penny. RBOB gas 171. We have gold up again, up another 1342. Silver up, up a whole 10 cents, 1486. Good week for the good guys in there, that's for sure. Anybody got for us, or somebody, traffic, weather, sports. By the way, it's raining.
It's raining, 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine, the quick guide to money and probability. Is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue, but Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription. Go to luckboxmagazine.com/jocks and sign up for your free digital subscription today. I signed up for mine, and I'm hoping everyone out there is signing up for theirs as well.
You gotta get a real one, though, and put it on the table. You are somebody there.
Absolutely.
It's cooler.
You want both.
Yeah.
Traffic, we have heavy volumes, building on the expressways, but no accidents to report on the Edens or Kennedy. Same with the Eisenhower or Stevenson. Southside expressways looking okay on the accident front as well, but because of the rain in the area, slow travel times all around, and that's going to be the case for the rest of the morning because we'll have another wave of storms coming in later this morning, it appears, and then we should see some sunshine later on, so hopefully the evening commute will be a little better. Off the expressways, a few issues. Down on the south side, 137th at Trumbull Avenue, there's a structure fire at 13834 South Trumbull Avenue, and so that is causing some congestion down there. Looks like Grand Avenue in Elmhurst at Lake Street, there is an accident. Just north of there, we have a crash at, actually, ramp restrictions, Route 53 northbound at Lake Cook Road. That's probably due to some flooding. And then out in the northwestern suburbs, Lake Street, US 20, just west of 290 at Route 59, there is a crash. So a few minor issues in the area, but the rain is causing significant slowdowns as you're heading out this morning. Weather today, as I mentioned, rain throughout the morning on and off. Then we should see a little bit of sunshine this afternoon going up to a high of 79. Right now it's rainy and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one today. Sunny with a high of 102, first triple digits we've had in 2019. Right now it's clear and 76. In sports, Cubs have won two in a row and are now percentage points back ahead of Milwaukee for first place in the NL Central. They doubled up the Rockies last night 6-3. White Sox jumped out to a 5-0 lead over the Nationals, only to surrender 9 straight runs, and they lost to Strasburg and the Nats 9-5. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Dodgers 9-0. NBA Finals returns this evening. That's an 8 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. It'll be Toronto at Golden State. That series is tied at one game apiece.
Chief. Is that hockey tonight, or they get an extra day because of the travel?
Extra day.
And I tomorrow.
NBA
tomorrow.
And the NHL have a agreement that they don't play on the same night for their finals.
All right.
Yeah, will those two leagues wrap up their series before football training camp?
4th of July, you know.
Yeah, it's already June 5th, and we're just getting to Game 3 in the basketball.
I like the part where you have the two. Well, Boston had a 10-day layoff, and the other guys had six? Because Boston swept, and the other guys won in 5 or 6.
Yeah,
why not just start 2 days later?
They, for whatever reason, they pre-scheduled their finals, and they do it, as if every series is going to go 7 games. And of course, it does. They don't usually go 7 games, and yet they don't move up their finals. I don't get it.
I mean, there's a dollar sign there somewhere, which I don't have a problem with necessarily because it's the business I'm in is making people money. But
as a sports,
it may have something to do with reserving rooms and facilities and things like that. But regardless, it's just crazy that it lasts this long because they're marquee events. The best series that they have happen when nobody cares who isn't involved in, who isn't a follower of one of the teams.
Well, was it baseball? It was a few years ago where both teams in the, not the World Series, the series, the one before that, pennant series, where both teams like swept, and it was like 10 days before the series started. By the time it started, nobody watched. It was like people were so over baseball. I mean, didn't it happen? Was it baseball that happened to, or was it bad? There was a huge drop down in listenership for the finals, whichever it was, because there was this huge gap between the last game and the. I don't know if I was.
I don't remember that, but it definitely could have happened. All I know as a sports fan, I like when there's stuff on, so they can keep this going for as long as they want until football starts. That'd be fine with me.
Well, I mean, they're
yeah, it's just that, you know, we're down to the hardcores on this, and you know, they've basically ceded their championship series. You know, the only thing that they have going for them is that I suppose is that. Nobody, that all of the first-run TV shows are done for the season, and everything's in reruns. So I guess they, as an alternative, they get to maintain some advantage because there's nothing else on. But I don't understand. To me, it makes no sense to run this long. It's not necessary.
Really don't need, like, 2 and 3 days off between games. I mean... One game off or one day off between games is plenty, and that part's really gotten ridiculous. I don't mind the layoff in between series. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but there's probably a reason for it. But once you start one night off between games, I think is plenty.
I tell you what, I've been watching this hockey. I don't think I've ever seen much better hockey. The you know, every sport these guys, you know, pretty much try their fanny off, but the hustle in this hockey is just incredible, and these two teams both bring it, and I've watched all four of these games, was, you know, pretty much late into the game, and I tell you what, it's great sport. I mean,
playoff hockey is excellent. It's just for me personally, if I don't have a rooting interest, it's hard for me to get into it. But man, like when the Blackhawks were running
on those, I don't want Boston to win.
Well, I don't want St. Louis to win.
Why? They haven't won. Why? What do you have?
I just don't like St. Louis. I don't like Boston either. Don't get me wrong. But
I haven't had to sit in a bar with.
So I don't care.
With 100 St. Louis fans being obnoxious, but I have it with Boston all the time.
I know. I hear you on that. It was enjoyable being at Tripoli Monday night after our basketball team won its third straight title. Which we had like a 3-year drought, and then now we've won 3 in a row, which is pretty cool. But anyway, we went to our local bar that sponsors us, which happens to be Tripoli, which happens to be a Boston bar. And we got there, and we walked in the door, and it was 2-2 with like 8 minutes to go in the third period. And we were just saying, God, please don't go to overtime. And right when we walked in, the Blues scored. And it was like we were the kiss of death. And then the Blues tacked on an empty netter, and that was it.
And those guys all left in an instant.
And they left pretty much, yeah, within 10 minutes after the game, they were gone. And that's what we wanted.
Yeah, that's what you wanted. It's a, it's a.
You guys just aren't very nice people, are you?
Well, we just wanted our table.
Yeah,
we just wanted our table.
We wanted our waitress. Did you even get a waitress?
We just have Polly.
All right. Well, it's good luck with that. But what can I say?
Polly's our guy.
He's a man.
He always gives us free shots, and we always take care of him.
Well, that's good. So Kevin, I'm a little concerned about the Fed savior thing. I'm kind of over that after 9 years of it. But clearly, you don't want to fight the Fed. And I just think that anybody who felt that they needed to be a little more protected in their portfolio, you're getting a chance. So anything you didn't sell 2 weeks ago that you really wished you would have, they're giving you another chance. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't. I'm not saying it's not going higher. But if you feel if my stock just got back up to this point, I was going to lighten up, it's back there. So do what you said you were going to do. I mean, it's everybody's portfolio. I mean, the funny part of it, it's a good thing that I don't give portfolio advice on the air, Kevin, because you really can't without seeing what anybody has, because everybody's stuff is different, and every person is different, and everybody. You know, some people continue to work when they're 75. Other people don't want to look at it. They want to go around the world. They don't want to touch it. Other people are very afraid of losing 5-10%. Other people are, you know, like I said, have income from property. They don't care. Everybody cares, but it wouldn't be the end of the world for them. It really is, and that's what makes the business so much fun. I mean, we met, I met a couple of new clients this week, and, you know, some of the nicest people you ever meet. And they've done everything right in life. They've had an industry, they had a business, they sold it, they've got some money that they, for their retirement, and they've got some Social Security. They've done the, you know, the 401k plan or the IRA plan just the way you're supposed to do it, you know, and it's a shame that the government's now telling them on risk-free money you're only going to get whatever. Because now if we drop the front part of the curve, we won't even be able to get people 2.4, 2.35, 2.5, whatever we've been getting people on their six-month T-bills. So if that goes back down to 1.5%, you're going to have more and more people saying, oh, I got to be in the market, I got to be here, I got to be there. And, you know, it's you look at the valuations, Kevin, there's an awful lot of stuff heading to the middle of a small circle. And I, you know, how, where it all plays out, I mean, I don't know, but it's, I don't see days like yesterday as necessarily, obviously it's healthy. It was one of the best days my people had forever, so I'm not gonna knock it. Matter of fact, I'm loving it. But the idea that, you know, oh my God, we're, this is happening, we got tariffs, we got the Fed not being all that, even though 2.5% or 2.75%, you know, by anybody's stretch, is accommodative. And I haven't heard of a soul where a bank saying, I'd like to give you a loan, I just don't have the money. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why they're not giving people loans that have nothing to do with the amount of money available. I mean, that's not the issue. I mean, they're not charging you 24% on your credit card because there's a money squeeze out there. If there is, they'd be paying, they couldn't wait to pay you 5% to bring money to their bank, and they're not doing that. So there is absolutely no money problem. And I guess, you know, one of the things that was basically bitching earlier in the show about, you know, not giving people the stats on this gambling and who, you know, how many problem gamblers do you think you have? What does the casino do with the people that, I mean, if you have a bar and somebody comes in and starts drinking every night, eventually when he passes whatever shot it is, no matter how big he or she is, you throw him out the door. I mean, what do you know if you're in a PTI Securities, if you have a checking account, I'm supposed to monitor your checking account. What I'm supposed to do with that, I have no idea. So we don't let people do checking accounts anymore because it's so undefined. Now, if you know that Matt Weber makes $150 a day and every night you see the guy lose $125, do you have any obligation like you do in the security business, like you do in the bar business, or do you have none and you just say thank you very much? I mean, it is, you know,
Well, Tom, I've seen the TV ads. They give you an 800 number for problem gambling. I think they are socially responsible companies, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm not saying you should watch out for other people. Okay? I mean, what I'm saying is there's this inconsistency. In some areas, you're supposed to be watching out for people. In other areas, you're not. You know, we wouldn't if you take out $9,000 3 days in a row, you can go to jail for money laundering because we're getting around a regulation, even if you didn't even know what the regulation was. Yet if the same person can lose $9,000 cash in a casino every night, there's nothing to be said to anybody, right?
At what point does it become unethical to keep taking someone's money?
Well, that's the point. I mean, I know that thank God we never had this issue. That if you had somebody who walked in here with $50,000, and it wouldn't be cash because they wouldn't take cash, and all of a sudden he buys Kevin O'Neill stock, puts his whole $50,000 in it, and he pays $2 for it, and all of a sudden it's a penny. Well, I got a tip from somebody. Okay.
By the way, you haven't sent me anyone with that stock lately.
Yeah, no kidding. So next month he brings in $100, and it's Matt Weber stock. After four or five times, you got to say, God's sake, who's your tipster? What are you doing? Don't you want me to help you find a better way to invest? There's some obligation to say. Now that's another beauty of it, Kevin. This is what's so screwed up about, I mean, our government and our regulations, because we have a full service firm. I have all this responsibility to watch out for people, whatever that means, because it is their money and they can do what they want with it. Yet, if I decide to have an electronics firm and decide I'm just not going to talk to anybody, like a Schwab, you can flay yourself any which way you sideways. Well, what's that electronic? He signed a paper and said he didn't want my help. Okay. I mean, but it's not.
They immediately go to Barbara Billingsley in the airplane.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this, the inconsistencies I see here are a problem. And I just, and again, for somebody who loves to gamble, but I don't like the idea that we're there are people thinking, and I weigh in with Matty Weber. He says, well, what's the problem with, you know, I mean, I had to explain to him that what taxes we pay on parking downtown. Because all the aldermen have limousines. They don't care. I mean, the object of an alderman is to figure out something you don't do and tax the people who do it. I mean, I haven't been a strip joint in, 35 years. Yet, so when I'm an alderman, first thing I'm going to do is say, hey, we still got strip joints? Yeah, there's four of them around. Let's raise the taxes there. I never go to one. Or what if I went off the booze? Well, let's raise the taxes on bars. I don't go on there anymore. I mean, it becomes kind of a bizarre world. And you would think there would be an adult someplace that says, at some level, this is all we can take from people. And I don't think we're there. And it troubles me because the people we're paying, I think, are hurting in a lot of cases. And I know I'm not getting anywhere with this, but I just get them off my chest. What can I say?
Yeah, but I know what you're saying is, sin taxes are still taxes. And ultimately, that's it. And so, is it something? You could probably make the theoretical argument that if I tax it more, I'll get less of it. So there's a social good in there, but that's not what happens. So instead, we're just taking money off of people who are already they're already problem consumers. And we're saying, well, nice of you to have the problem. We'll take some of that, too.
I mean, I would like a legislator, one person, male, female, black, white, blue, green, I don't care. One person, before you ask me to vote on medical marijuana, I want a very rigorous study of just how it's working out, pluses and minus, for Colorado and Washington and a couple other places that have it. How many people end up in the emergency room every night? How many people from... I mean, I want to know exactly what's going on. Do you think any of these people...
Yeah, I think that kind of information is pretty well available, too. So I don't think that's hard to do it. I think the bigger problem when it comes to that is it goes back to what you said at the beginning. You know, if we were spending the money well, if we were managing the budget well, and then you start saying, well, I'm adding revenue sources for whatever reason. Suspend reality for a minute and say we're doing it for good reasons. Then fine, if you're going to manage it responsibly, that's one thing. But if you're just saying I want more money and I'm so that I can continue to be irresponsible, that's just madness. And if people want to keep voting for that, good. You know, go ahead, help your, have at it. But you're killing your state.
Well, as you know, I wander from place to places, and there's people that are big time. Well, I'll say there's big time Republicans, which I'm kind of starting to separate this, and there's big time Trumpkins, and then there's big time the liberal side. Well, there's the liberal side, and then there's what used to be Democrats. It's almost like there's four parties now. It's like old Republicans, Trumpkins, old Democrats, and whatever the liberal end.
Probably more like six.
But, I mean, the one thing I absolutely will say, I will say that I believe Trump is a pathological liar. I mean, I've observed it. But the people who tell me, yes, he is, but so is every politician I've ever met, I don't have an argument for that, Kevin. I mean, I was there. I was a young kid. I was young once. And the guy two doors down from us was the original head of the lottery. And if you could dig up the lottery thing from, I'm going to say 73, 4, 5 was the lottery, somewhere in there, it was going to go directly for education. I will bet anybody, every nickel I have, 10 to 1 on what you have, that not every nickel in the lottery went for education. I don't know what percentage.
Oh, no, absolutely it did. Back in the days of Mike Royko, he did a lot of reporting on this. Yes, it absolutely did.
Really?
And, every bit went into education, and that allowed them to take other money out of the education budget.
Well, okay.
So that it was a net zero.
Right. So it was a net zero. But my point is it, I mean, if you
so
could tell me.
Technically, it was true, even yeah. though it was, it absolutely was a lie.
Right. So, but if, so if you want to, if you could prove to me that the 19 cents that I'm paying in gas tax, every penny of it went to, properly bid jobs on highways and roads, and it's just not enough anymore, how much more do you want? 5 cents, 10 cents, 19 cents. I'm with it, Kevin. But I don't believe any of these people. I mean, I've reached that stage. I mean, after seeing what's happened to the poor tugboat drivers, where in 80 years they haven't gotten a dime back, where's that money? You can't tell me that's in a special trust fund somewhere in some bank where there's now $40 billion there, just waiting to be used on a lock and dam. I guarantee it's not.
So you go back to your, you know, Trump is a pathological liar, and so is everybody else. He's just more obvious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's really the only huge difference. Well, there's other huge differences too.
Well, I mean,
as you guys were talking about him yesterday, I thought, you know, it reminds me of something, and that there's a whole management style that he has that I absolutely abhor, but it's not that unusual, because I've seen it several times. I've observed it several times. He is one of those people that, you know, instead of he may or may not have a vision of what, you know, things are supposed to be, and he may or may not articulate it, but what happens is every time he gets involved in something, it's like a tornado blows through. Everything just gets turned upside down, and it's disruptive to the people who are trying to move something, you know, to move their departments in a direction. It's just so unproductive. I once had a boss who was referring to someone else and said he has an incredible ability to generate inactivity because of the style. That it was, you know, it blew everything apart so much that rather than cause something to happen, it just paralyzed people, and it made it really, really difficult to get anything done.
Kevin,
I don't know if Trump's paralyzing people or not, but what he is he's got so many different angles, so many different things happening at the same time that, you know, they don't seem to make sense together. I'm glad he can multitask and all, but man, it's you know, you sit there and start looking at things and saying that A, is it cross purposes with B? Why are we doing this?
Well, the idea of slapping the Mexican tariff
makes no sense to me at all.
The slapping the Mexican tariff thing on basically a day after you're bitching at the Democrats for not passing the new agreement. I mean, God, you just reneged on your own agreement the day after you wanted people to pass it. But
right, and you know, I guess they're sending a delegation up later this week, or there's one here now, or something. Hey, you know, maybe it'll wind up working in the end. That he turned it so upside down that now everybody is saying, okay, scramble, we have to do something. But that's such a high risk.
Kevin, we only have a minute.
Possibly unproductive and, you know, counterproductive approach. That boy, it better work.
Yeah, Kevin, we only have a minute, but let's talk about it tomorrow. We're switching for the listeners. Lou is flying back from somewhere tomorrow, somewhere overseas. So he's going to take Friday, and Kevin's going to be on tomorrow. Let's talk about this tomorrow, because what do you do when you teach the management classes? What if, well, this will never happen? What if somebody put me in charge of something like a state or the SEC or someplace, and I just see a culture that is absolutely flat ass wrong? And can you change those people, or you got to start over? Well, let's make that.
Can
kind
you
of a
change
thing.
Culture? Yes, you can. It's really hard work, or you can take the McKinsey approach, and we can talk about that tomorrow too.
Yeah, let's do that. SP Futures up 15.50. So we'll follow up on yesterday's rally. Well, not 50 points like yesterday. NASDAQ Futures up 51. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes. We have Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Jack Silverman. I don't know who's on the headphones over there, but that band that you just played, Matty Weber probably knows. Jack, you know who that is?
Buffalo Springfield.
I can barely hear you.
Buffalo Springfield?
Yeah, when did they break apart?
I do not know.
1968. That was long before Jack, I think.
Yeah.
You're playing songs from bands, and some of these guys were back a long way. It was Russell, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm in New York trying to find the quietest part of the lobby of my hotel that I can find to talk to you, which is kind of difficult. There's going to be background music today.
Well, that's okay. I was I was a little bit of a music star last night, which I'm not, but my buddies Kevin and the rest of the guys that I went to school with really are into music huge. And I walk into this, it's one of the places we stop once in a while, Club Lago. It's right near where my friends lives, and they always have like a channel that's at, like kind of a history thing, and we're playing Woodstock, and the guy goes, "Oh, we can't figure who that band is." I go, "That's Canned Heat," because they had just shipped me last week the Canned Heat version of On the Road Again from Woodstock, and I listened to it. So out of the blue, they look at me like, "Man, you know your music?" I go, "Not really. I know that one song because they just shipped it to me."
Did they try to engage you in all kinds of obscure discussions about music, and you're like, "Listen, it was a fluke."
It was a fluke. You know, I'm way too clever for that. I made my one spot, and I was leaving. You know, my one injection of knowledge on the subject, timing was perfect, and that was it. So, how are you?
I'm good. To deviate to personal for a second, my oldest finished eighth grade last week.
That's fun.
And she said for her present she wanted a trip to New York and to get to see Book of Mormon. So I'm actually here on, I guess this would be sort of a vacation. So
good for you. Are you doing the matinee thing, or are you going tonight?
We went on Sunday night, actually. It was the first thing we did when we got here. We flew in Sunday morning and went to the play. This is actually the end of the trip. As they said in, as George Clooney said in, gosh darn it, the half vampire movie where he says, "Get back on the clock."
Yeah.
This morning I'm getting back on the clock. Part of her eighth grade graduation trip is going to the office with Dad in New York.
Wow. Hey, sounds.
Because I got a couple of things I have to do today. So
this is the young lady I met, correct?
Correct. Correct.
Well, she's
the one that's in the. She's actually a domer, sort of. She's doing a pre-college program at Notre Dame that she got accepted to.
Really? Good for her.
So we keep pushing her in that direction.
What does she think about cardigans and pipes?
She's got her own unique taste as far as those things go. The little guy that she's going to die that I'm talking about, the little guy that she hangs out with the most, looks just like Kim Jong-un.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and he does not wear cardigan.
No.
He's a little player. He's kind of a half Kim Jong-un and half that Gangnam-style guy.
Oh, God. A young Eddie Haskell. Kind of a young Eddie Haskell.
As opposite of Dad as you could possibly ever get, I guess is what I just figured out.
Well, when she actually selects one, it'll be a Dad clone, probably.
Maybe. We'll see. We get along extremely well. So she's the one that's the author as well. So,
God.
We have synced very well on this trip. It's been an awful lot of fun.
Well, is she on board with everything in life will be fine as soon as the Fed cuts rates 0.25%?
Oh, she is well aware of all of that. She can care less what I do.
Does it, are you on this beacon like everybody else? If only the Fed, I was listening to these people on CNBC last week, Dr. J among them. If the Fed just cut, everything would be fine. They're the only people on earth that are screwing up other this otherwise miraculous economy.
Does the administration have some sort of, you know, dirt on every single person at CNBC, so they're getting them to push the Fed in their direction?
I think that
sounds like I've got a conspiracy here. That there's something going on if they're all saying that.
I think if you sit in that spot, you become like a legislator in Illinois. All you think about is one thing: your programs you're pushing, and you need money for the programs. You never stop to think that the money you're dragging out of people, they need more for themselves than you need for the program, or may very well. The idea I think it's impossible if you live in New York, fly down to the NBC, CNBC desk or Fox Business or whatever, and you're making $1.5 million a year. I think after a long time, it's impossible for you to really understand the four legs of the tax stool. I think it's impossible for you to understand the difference between the stock market and the economy. And I think if you're in the Fed for any length of time, you lose track of everything about what's good for banks and what's good for other people. I just think you just get co-opted to the
point. You're in the bubble.
Yeah, you're in the bubble. Yeah. I honestly believe that because
that's understandable. I think to a certain extent, you and I end up in the bubble. I think you do a good job of keeping your perception of the people that are not in the bubble. But it's something that I think all of us in the financial industry can be somewhat guilty of. You got to step back an awful lot.
Well, I'm going to say that the CBOE, and I love being on the board there, and obviously I love trading there, but in 6 years of being on the board, the seventh floor was a bubble. It was what's good for us, what's good for other people. And they were the nicest group of people I think I've ever met individually. And yet it happens. You get co-opted. You're not so worried about are things as easy as possible for the customer, for the competition, for this thing. You get co-opted. And the member firms are right there your distribution system will always try and co-opt you. The banks will always,
You're absolutely correct. And on the business side of things right now, one of the exchanges, and it's not a domestic exchange, has been doing their own thing. And I'm trying to play carefully here. One of the foreign exchanges that has kind of not really had a cohesive approach to how they go about doing fees and everything else, and feels like they've lost touch with the member firms and the customers and everybody else, is looking around right now to figure out how to kind of get out of their bubble. I had a discussion with one of them the other day over iced coffees, and so I know that sometimes they actually become aware of it. It's not just SIBO. I guess what I was really trying to say was, it's not just SIBO. They all kind of end up in that place, and then they try to loop them. And if it looks like it's starting to have a negative effect on them, they're going to suddenly reach out and find out what it is they're not paying attention to anymore that they should be paying attention to.
Well, you've got an entire industry that, and I know because I compete in that industry, that people don't want necessarily to trade anymore. I talk about firms, and firms, the whole thing is gathering assets, charging you money, and doing nothing about it. When I get new clients in, I inevitably get this huge hunk of sheets. Somebody's got $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million. There's 300,000 with Big Cap Bob, and guess what? Big Cap Bob's got 50 stocks they're in, so the first three pages are Bob's crap, basically. Then it's Mid Cap Mike or Mid Cap Mary, and then there's 50 stocks there, and then there's three pages of that crap. And you're like, what is all this stuff? What are you doing? If you wanted to hedge it, what would you even do? So the entire world is set up like that, because you're not, and you'll see people that are 75, there's no fixed income, that there should be because of the rates we're paying, and cash, people don't want cash, but you can still get a little bit in cash if you go to the treasuries like we do here. This is not a plug, but what I'm saying is, all of a sudden the market starts going down. You've disrupted a tremendous amount of wealth in this country. Both the people that are handling it, people are starting to get phone calls. Hey, why am I down? You charge me 1%, I'm down. You should have done something. Well, what's the something? The something is, these are all flat ass long portfolios. There's nothing to do. Big Cap Bob, if he loses 4.5 instead of 5, he did a good job in his mind and in the firm's mind. But you get to this. You if anything you can do, and we also have a president who basically said, I'm going to be graded by the stock market, which in my mind was exceptionally foolish. But that's what he's
doing. I sure wouldn't want to be judged by something I got no control over.
That's exactly. Well, he thinks he does. And it's now all of a sudden, everybody's convinced that if the Fed were to drop 0.5 point, that we're going to goose this back into the stock market. But it's the same, don't know. I feel like I'm saying the same thing all the time on different subjects. I was, you know, basically ragging about the state of Illinois. How much rigorous study went into five new casinos? Are you just going to deflate the ones you already have? I think the answer is probably yes, and probably a study would, maybe would tell you that. Maybe I'd be surprised. But the fact is, there probably wasn't one. Now, all of a sudden, I mean, when you start worrying about interest rates, you are a professor. You know that you start putting more money into the system if you think there's a credit crunch problem. Does anybody think for a second there's a credit crunch problem here when banks are still paying zero interest on people or half of 1% or something? Does anybody think for a second that there's not enough money in the system? I mean, I would say absolutely not. You know, so what are you doing? As a matter of fact, I'm looking here they've got this new gig on this debtclap.org. Domestic product, U.S. domestic product, $21,180,000, Russell, which you probably knew already. What do you suppose that's up since 2000?
2000. Threefold?
I'm stunned. 125%.
Why are you stunned?
It's only up 25%.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. Okay. M2 money supply. How much is it up since 2000?
Now you've got the fear of God in me now that I've got the on me. How much is M2 up since the year 2000?
Same date as the money. Same date as the GDP.
That was 20%. 50%.
It's up 207%.
200. Okay, well that's the one. That's tripled.
Yeah. So does anybody think? Does anybody think we have a credit problem? How could you possibly?
We should not have. No, you know what? It's not necessarily that the money's not. You know that the money's not out there. It's just not being used.
Well, that's my point.
You know, that's the deal. So we don't really need to put much more money out there. We need to figure out a way to get the capital that's out there, away from it going just back and forth between the bank and the government, banks and the government, and the bank making a small percentage of a really large number over and over again.
But if you've been a student of the last 10 years, which you and I have been, The way to goose the market is for the Fed to come out and say, we're pouring more money into the system. Because it was a percentage of it goes right into the market. It's not going on other loans. Total U.S. debt, here's a Carl Denninger number. Since 2000, U.S. domestic product is up 125%. U.S. total debt is up 183%. So, did we even really grow?
No, we leveraged.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's like somebody with a brokerage account that has $100 in there, and they suddenly decide to switch it over to a margin account. I know I'm being overly simple.
Yeah.
Switch it over to a margin account, and now they had $100 in the SPY. Now they got $200 in the SPY, even though they still only have $100.
Right.
So, we didn't grow. We leveveraged.
But how are we ever going to make
every it? Once in a while you'll hear people talk about they got to deleverage a little bit, and then the stock market sells off tremendously.
Right, right.
Yeah,
because that's that's become the wealth parameter. I guess where I'm kind of going with this all the time, Russell, is if you don't identify the problem, if you don't say, gee, Manny Weber has a broken leg, it's sticking out of the skin. If we treat him for pain, if we treat him for whatever, if we look everywhere else but below the waist, we're never going to fix Matty Weber until we say, we've got a broken leg, let's fix the broken leg. I mean, sometimes it's a tough message, but how do you ever get to where you want to go unless you know where you're at?
I don't know. You just rub a little dirt on it. You keep moving on.
Rub a little dirt on it. Well, Matty Weber, we could do that. Just rub a little dirt on it. Give him a couple more beers.
But I think we can actually
fix a lot of this stuff, but not if we just let it go year after year after year. I mean, but it seems like that's the easiest way now. And I want individual. Here's what I want, Russell. It's very simple. This is not a Mayberry thing. I want to go back to the day where the median American can make $500 a week, live on $450 and save $50. That's to me how you build wealth. It's not
the thing is, I think you can do that. It's that people don't choose to do that. You know, they keep dangling all this stuff on them.
I'm going to say that's what next time you're in the office, I'll introduce you to a few people that are the median Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the number. You know, $56,000, have the house, the one or two kids, the whole nine yards. And they will be very anxious to tell you pretty much exactly what their money situation is. And, you know, one's paying a little tuition for a Catholic grammar school, how much the property taxes are going where, what it costs if they have to park downtown. You'll find that there is not the 25 extra bucks a week to go in the, it's a real fight to keep the credit cards not going up.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it's a lot of essentials that end up going on the credit card.
Right.
And it's not the, oh boy, here comes the big game and Best Buy has put the big screen TV on sale. Let's upgrade to the 72 inch.
Right.
There's a lot of trying to keep the car running, using the credit card at the grocery store. I know there's a lot of people in that range, but there's also a lot of people, that are making a lot of money, and
yes,
we know these people.
Yes.
And they feel the need to lease the highest end BMW and the highest end Porsche and live in a house that they can just about cover the mortgage on, as long as both spouses are working, and one hiccup in their personal situation and they're in a lot of trouble.
Russell, there was a study.
I see people like that out in Hinsdale and out in Clarendon Hills.
I would. There was a study. Of course, I'll never find it. There's people who can find this stuff. It's not me. This has to be 20 years ago. I remember he had a few people helping him, and some of them were women. Anyway, there's a team of people that put this study together, and they basically, every one of the, they did like the 10 income classes. You know, maybe not the super filthy rich where you don't even know how much you have, much less trying to spend it. But somewhere up that line, they went from, people making $20,000 a year to like $1 million a year. And the question was, how much would you need if I had to write you a check just to make you comfortable? I'm not talking about a new yacht. I'm talking about pay off your credit card debts, pay off, get caught up on any other debt you might have, maybe take a small vacation and have a little something in the bank. And it came back on a percentage basis at virtually every level was 20% of 1 year's salary. So it almost didn't matter. The guy who was making $600,000 a year versus the guy making 60, he was on his skis for $100,000, and the guy making 60 was on his skis for $10,000, basically.
They all had
a little something.
Same percentage of, yeah, just percentage of what they had.
The third car you didn't really need. The like you say, the new TV, the vacation that maybe should have been 1 week instead of two, whatever it was, everybody stretches almost the same amount. And the weird part is, Russell, it's hard for us to criticize our government for doing it when we all do it, not all of us.
Exactly. Well, who did it first?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, basically,
actually, I think we all started doing it at the same time. Honestly, I think back in the, going back 90 years in the 20s when credit for individuals first became a thing, and that followed the creation of the Federal Reserve, didn't it?
The
second iteration of the Federal Reserve, didn't it?
Yes. There was the first bank in the United States, the second bank in the United States, then 60 years later, there was the Federal Reserve. There was nothing for a while, a long while. But I guess where I'm going is I think the Depression era people, I don't know if you remember if you're a little younger than me, so like my grandfathers and that whole ilk, My grandfather, this is why I only knew one of them. One of them was dead. But that whole ilk, they would tell you stories about the Depression. People's view of the world was next year could always be a lot worse than this year. So never get ahead of yourself. Put money in the bank. Always have something for a rainy day. Yet, basically in the 50s, when I started remembering stuff in the late 50s, because I was 8 years old or whatever, I mean, it all changed. I mean, to a certain extent. I mean, my stepfather basically got a raise every year. Everybody I knew, the people in the neighborhood, we were in a blue-collar neighborhood, everybody got a little bit of a raise every year. If you wanted to go paint a house on the weekends and make a few extra bucks, you did, because most guys were somewhat skilled at those kinds of things. And the idea was next year is going to be better than this year. So I can buy a house today that, boy, you know, we're going to be scraping for a year, but next year, if I get even a 4% raise, we're going to be okay. And virtually every one of those guys, we bought our house on 102nd Place in 1958. Okay, I'm going to say by 1965, the mortgage was half of one paycheck, you know, of my stepfather. Because he'd got a couple of promotions, and there was a little bit of inflation, not a lot, but a little bit, to where he was getting, you know, 5% raise every year. And on the house went up 2% a year. I mean, there was this idea that I can, especially if I'm 25, 30 years old, I can lean forward a little bit, and then things will be better. Next year I'll be making more, and you know that my company's doing well, everything's okay. Why should I not think that tomorrow will be better than today? Which is a totally different view of the world than Depression-era people. Something will happen that I have no control of. The bank, I have my money, and yeah. I go there, and the door's not going to open. And I better have some in the bank, some in the mattress, someplace, safety deposit. It was a totally different mentality. But even the government right now, we've taken that mentality, and else, right now, if the premier economist in the world, other than you and me, well, you got the degree, I don't, but the premier economist in the world will tell you, as long as you get your, and you can name the people, I can't, as long as you get your growth in debt slightly, I won't say something gross, slightly below the your growth in your society. Say your growth in society, the real growth is 2%, which I question whether ours is. Certainly not 3.5. And your debt growth is 2.999. Don't worry about it. By the year 2085, it'll all work out. Because guess what? We're just going to grow our way out of it. I mean, even Trump, he did the
No, we all believe that now. Yeah. You know, you were talking about people that have this Depression-era mentality. There's a guy, Benjamin Roth, I think he was at Citigroup. He found his grandfather's diary. His grandfather was a lawyer in one of the manufacturing towns in Ohio. And he basically kept a diary throughout the Great Depression. And it was like early on in the diary, and I just tweeted out the book, but early on in the diary, it's a great way to get where that mentality came from. Early on, he's like, I think this thing's going to turn. And then as time goes by, it's like, I just don't know how much longer we can, can wait for this thing to turn. You know, bank has gone out of business. There was no cash whatsoever. Everybody started judging the odds that a bank was going to give you your money back and how much of it you were going to get, and started actually trading these things as currency. It was an amazing mentality. We never in a million years would, in this day and age, worry about... I don't think anybody really worries about getting their money out of the bank.
No, but
I really
but
don't.
I also never...
Thank you, but the level of trust there, and I think it's almost a level of trust that you see that FDIC thing if you ever go to a bank branch, and when you see that FDIC thing, you just think that's almost like a little sign that says, we guarantee your money's gonna get your money whenever you want it.
Well, sure. Well, securities firms are the same way, but we lost a massive level of trust that we're still recovering from in 2007 when people thought essentially the collateral in U.S. homes was good, and it turns out it wasn't. Hey, hold that thought, Russell. Luckbach Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99. I would recommend getting one issue. The covers are spectacular. Put it on your coffee table so everybody knows you have it. Then just go to Stocks and Jocks listeners, get a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/, I guess that's /Jocks. Great magazine. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Warburton aboard. Jack Silverman helping him out. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. S&P futures now only up 6.25. We were up 15 earlier. So we're sinking, but we're still not showing any give back on yesterday's big rally, so that's good. NASDAQ futures up 28.75. Dow futures, let me find out where the Dow futures are. I don't have my page up. I was looking at money supply numbers. How's that for fun in the morning? Dow futures up about 135. So everybody's still up. Individual stocks in the Dow. I've got Apple up 342. Apple was under, was getting down to 170. Now it's 183, so it's had a really nice bounce. Boeing's up 138, 346. That's really about the only ones I've seen really moving heavy in the Dow. United Healthcare, which has gotten basically its butt kicked. It was up, is up $1.24 today. Amazon is up 10 after the huge drubbing it took the other day. One thing about yesterday, before we get to sports weather, the other stuff is, interesting is that the NASDAQ was up almost as much as it was down the day before. Matter of fact, it's almost the exact same number. Yet the stocks that caused the NASDAQ to go down the day before heavily, the Amazons, the Googles, those things, they didn't come back near as much. It's not like they all came back. Other stocks took their place and came up, which is really, really fairly interesting. So there was, you don't just look at the NASDAQ and think it was the same stocks. It wasn't. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 49,
31.4%. These are steady from earlier. FTSE up 31.4. CAC around up 29.5. So moderate rally, moderate even rally. Nikkei up 367. Huge bounce back for those guys. 20,776. They were 21.5 a while ago. They're not there anymore. Shanghai down 86 cents. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 133. That's 0.5%. We've got oil down 44 cents. 53.04. Remember we thought this was going to 100? Nah, so Brent down 16 cents, 61.81. RBOB gas, 171. So when you go to get gas and it's like 330, say, hey, what the bleep, over? And then the guy will throw you out of his gas station. We got gold up another 1560. I'm going to say, I could say my clairvoyance was rewarded, or maybe it was my stubbornness was rewarded, but finally, my guys are doing great in their gold stuff. Silver up 17 cents, almost $15, $14.94. Still a little bit of that, not as much as gold. Jack, Manny, who's ever doing sports weather traffic, let's do it.
36 minutes after the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a disabled vehicle on the Kennedy right now on the outbound side just before the O'Hare extension I-190 that's blocking the right lane, and this is causing issues as folks are heading out toward O'Hare on the Kennedy, so keep that in mind. But Kennedy's been pretty jammed in both directions due to the rain this morning, so it's moving slowly. Eisenhower is not looking much better, and now there's a crash on the inbound side just before Harlem Avenue. So Route 390 to the old post office is up to an hour and 2 minutes. From Mannheim, it's 44 minutes. So solid traffic on the Ike in both directions as well. Same could be said for the Stevenson, though there's no accidents or disabled vehicles to report. Southside expressways are looking okay. The rain, at least this first wave of it, seems to have moved past through the area. Could have a couple of other isolated storms later on this morning. But then we should be relatively sunny later on this afternoon. We'll reach a high of 79. Right now it's mostly cloudy and drying up, and 69 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one down in the Valley of the Sun. Sunshine with a high of 102 today. Right now it's clear and 77. In sports, Cubs have won two straight. They doubled up the Rockies last night 6-3. White Sox blew a 5-0 lead, lost to the Nationals 9-5. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Dodgers 9-0. And Game 3 of the NBA Finals is tonight. They return to Golden State with the series tied at one game apiece. Chief.
Before the break, we were talking a little bit about changes in mentality and how people, you know, it's funny, Russell, I think we're starting to see it again. All these maybe getting on the skis a little bit, and again, I hope necessarily not. You see all these buildings going up in Chicago. It used to be they were all condos, and now they're a real lot of them are rentals. And the rents are pretty darn high. And a lot of young people are moving into town, and the city's done a pretty good job at getting, well, McDonald's moved into the city from Oak Brook. Well, that's just a transfer from one part of the county to another, but still, when the city, Google came in here. We've got, who's taking a big chunk of the post office here, Manny? Is it, is it Uber?
Uber. I thought it was Salesforce. I don't know, actually.
Maybe one of the two, but they're
Salesforce has a big presence now in the West Loop. I know, I'm sure Uber does as well. But yeah, there's a lot of companies that have come in.
And I think you get a lot of the young people that don't mind paying more for rent than maybe we used to.
It's still nothing compared to New York and San Francisco.
Some of these places are pushing.
Not even close. Yeah. I was talking with a girl when I was in New York a couple weeks ago. She's paying $3,700 a month for a one bedroom in Brooklyn. In Brooklyn, not even Manhattan.
Like I said, I'm here with my eighth grader and mom, who I know listens. Don't listen for a second. She really wants to go to NYU and maybe eventually live in New York. And I'm giving her a little perspective on what it costs to live here. So if we go by a realty office, I'll show her what you get for $3,000 or $4,000. And we are staying in Brooklyn because she wanted to see what it was like for people that actually live here. We also went by a townhouse that had a for sale sign out front. And this was in Greenwich Village, so she's not moving there, at least unless she becomes a best-selling author very quickly. we did a little guess on what we played a little Price is Right before we looked up the price for this three-bedroom townhouse. She guessed $2.5 million. I guessed $3.5 million, and the price, ding ding ding, $10.5 million.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it's ridiculous here, and I've got a half sister out in San Francisco. You know how, like, during the heat of the real estate boom, where you would actually have people putting in bids for houses, That happens for rental properties out there. They'll have three or four people that will put in a sealed bid as to what they're willing to pay per month. And she's had, but that's why there's so many homeless people, or people living in tents. They literally have gotten priced out of, you know, apartments they've been in for years.
Well, you've got the a city like San Francisco. You've got all kinds of potential earthquake problems. There's no new room, and you can't go up. But my point is, these Chicago buildings, I don't know if, since Maddie lives in a nice place at a nice rate, I've been hearing my guys the other night at the Martin Anthony's were telling me these new buildings are $3,500. It's not New York, but it's not $1,500 like it was here 10 years ago either. I mean, the creep is dramatic. And what the gentleman was telling me was that, and he rents a lot of these places, almost all of them are being subsidized by... My point is that when Audrey and I had this discussion, you know, Manny, how many discussions do you win with your fiancé?
I don't try to win.
She's pretty sensible, though.
Yeah, we don't...
Fiancé, congratulations!
Thank you.
Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah. Manny went to New York, he did it upright. I'm proud of him. He couldn't have picked a better lady, for God's sake.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And
but yeah, we don't debate on things. I just so yeah.
Yet.
I mean, yeah, you're right. That could change, but I don't take strong opinions.
I would I could always, when I was remodeling houses, I always thought that I could break apart any couple by saying, go out and buy, I got all your stuff wired, you know, with the little, what do they call the thing? The piglet hanging from the ceiling. All the lights work. All we got to do is put fixtures in. Why don't the two of you go out and buy like 15 fixtures? That would cause a fight anywhere because nobody has the same taste in fixtures.
That's probably true.
Anyway, Audrey and I, this is 2007, 2008, her being in real estate and being as good as it can be in there, I mean, people love her and because she knows her stuff and she's nice to people and there's a combination there that's always good. Anyway, prices are going up. She says, you need to start buying some real estate. And I said, Odd, it's non-sustainable. What are you talking about? You're always conservative. Well, yeah. So I, of course, did this research, which goes over, shall we say, like a fart in church when you do this. I said, Odd, look at this stuff. If you took the average price of a home at the time, which was what, Russell, 250, 260 it got up to, median price, and you looked at how many people could afford. The bottom line is, if somebody gave you the $50,000, which of course somebody can even give you now in a closing, and they're up your shorts, find out where you got it. But say somebody gave you the $50,000 down payment for 20%. Somebody needed $85,000 a year at the time to cover the mortgage, the insurance, and the taxes. That was what you needed to get that loan after somebody gave you $50,000. And the only problem with that is, $85,000 a year was like 15% of the population in 2000. So we're talking about the median home costing as much as only, you know, the top 15% could really afford. And because then you went down a list of what people made. This was 2008. If you're talking about anybody, Maddie, you know this because your brother's in the industry, but he's a chef. Food service. What do you think people made in 2008? Average food service person.
Annually?
Yeah.
I mean, nothing. They make like
20.
20. Yeah, I was going to say like 25. But
the average person who worked downtown, say, I won't say an assistant or whatever, if you're just some, I won't say schlump, somebody working in a cubicle doing something for somebody, whatever it is you do. You know, if you're working on catalogs, you're working on, I'm not demeaning any of this. I'm just saying the average staffer job, maybe in a firm like yours 10 years ago, what do you think they made?
I would say 35, 40.
Ding, 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 40. If you were a relative big shot in a hospital, not a doctor, with somebody who worked in one of the labs, did the test, those kinds of things, what do you think they make?
I would double it and say 80.
65.
Okay.
So virtually all those people, of which we know all kinds of them, nobody's touching this $85,000, right? Now, granted, maybe the wife's working too, but that comes with, or the guy's working, she's the main breadwinner in this day and age. But the fact is, then there's cost to that. So the point being is, but I don't know that there are people that there's, you look at all these buildings going up in Chicago, I don't know that there's 800,000 people in the city of Chicago able to afford $3,500 a month rent. I mean, there's a lot of people moving to town, there's a lot of industry coming in. I'm all for all of that. I just don't know that the numbers are there. you know, I'm wondering.
You know, I was actually shocked at this one. I had I'm going to make it gender neutral. I'm certain they are not listening right now, but one of my favorite students this last year at Loyola got an offer from one of the firms in our industry. She actually got a signing bonus coming out of college. They gave her
a lot of that going
around. Just gave up that so much for the gender neutral.
A lot of that going around, by the way.
They gave her a $5,000 signing bonus, and her starting salary was $77,000
at
undergrad.
Good for her.
I know, and it's funny because she didn't apply for the job. She actually applied for an internship at the place, and they said, you know what? We just had this full-time thing open up. How would you like to just take this job?
Is the job?
I think there's a and she's like half finance, half technology. I think there's a shortage of people that have those skills right now.
Okay, 77.
And seeing people have to fight for it.
But yeah,
those are also the kind of jobs at the kind of places that you were kicking around as far as who's taking the post office space. Well, Salesforce and Uber are going to be looking for people like that. I think Groupon, even though they have questionable profitability, takes up a lot of space. GoGo, the in-flight internet, takes up a lot of space and has a lot of people in Chicago too. That high two figures salary or whatever is becoming a lot more common.
Well, Chief's numbers are
not. People that got some skills.
Chief's numbers, first of all, he said they're 10, 12 years ago. Second of all, they're median numbers. They're not Chicago numbers. You couldn't.
Yeah. Those were Chicago numbers.
Recently, and rent a place in Chicago, you need to make about 85.
Those were Chicago numbers.
That's about what she's making.
No, that was Chicago. Those were Chicago numbers.
Because I don't know anyone in my group of friends in their early 30s that are making less than at least probably 60.
Yeah. Okay.
Got it.
And that would be the low end.
Okay.
Which, you know, was what I was aspiring to in life when I came out of college.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. I'm saying, okay.
But I know that's different than what the country's numbers are.
Okay, so I know. I'm talking about. They've gone up. Well, Chicago numbers have gone up since then. I don't know if they have in hospitals that much.
If you're doing sales, you like out of college even, your base salary is 50 and your commission's 50.
Okay.
I mean, or maybe 40-40. Even your first sales job out of college. So, you know, if you hit your number, you're making 80. If you hit, 75% of it, you're making 65, 70, whatever. That's your first sales job. And as you work up in sales, then, your base gets a little higher and your rates get a little higher. And that's just, every company is hiring those guys. They're always hiring. I mean, if you can sell something, obviously anyone will hire you. But then my accounting friends, my lawyer friends, all those guys.
Accountants and lawyers always make money.
Well, yeah, but they're just 4-year college.
Right, and so, okay.
First job out of school at 23, making 65, and you work your way up every couple years.
Well, that's my point, is you keep thinking you're doing it, and a lot of people do. I'm saying, look at the numbers. Now, this lady is coming downtown. She's making $77,000. And by the way, I think that's high end for her starting salary, which is great for her. And she got, now if she's here, 77, and can she afford a $3,500 apartment? Now, what do you?
God,
is,
no.
Is a well, that's what I'm saying.
She's a smart one. She's going to keep living at home with mom, which
okay.
is what she did all the way through college.
No one is living in the $3,500 apartment in Chicago unless their combined income is at least $200.
Well, my point is, Mitty, yeah. Look out the window. You see 15 cranes. If you can crane your neck around, get your neck out of all four sides of the building. Every one of those things is an apartment building, and I'm telling you, the rent in those joints, $3,200 to start. I don't know how they're going to fill them up. Was my question.
They're not the people I know, but there's people that make a lot more than the people I know.
Well, I mean, it comes down to numbers. So the question is, what is the next boom and bust? I mean, the last time it was real estate because it got too high. Now is it going to be? Are we going to? And this has happened in my lifetime in Russell, 2-3 times where. All of a sudden, you saw cranes in Chicago. You're tripping over them if you're flying a drone. We didn't have drones back then. And all of a sudden, there's not a building built for a decade, right, Russell? We overbuild,
yeah.
Then we come back.
And another thing along, just kind of anecdotal, is for some really weird reason, you know how you get targeted ads on the Instagram? I've been getting rental ads for like the last 2 weeks,
yeah.
Like crazy. I ain't looking, honey, I know you're listening. I'm not looking for an apartment. I don't know where the hell that
you must
from.
Have. You must have. But you must have clicked on an apartment.
I clicked on one once.
There you go.
Home. I mean, the aggressiveness there is just instead of you know, all the ads from different clothing places for cardigans and the ads for different colored glasses that I get all the time. All of a sudden, it's just a ton of ads for apartments.
Well, you're way too smart, and by the way, way too. In tune with your wife to be like the guy in the Bonfire of Vanities that had the girlfriend, and he'd go from the wife. The guy was making $1 million a year in 1981, and he'd go from the wife where all she did was basically bitch at him because he didn't give her enough, even though she had everything. Then he'd go over the girlfriends. Why he had a girlfriend, I have no idea. As soon as he walked in the door, she started in on him, but her apartment wasn't big enough and her car wasn't good enough. The poor guy, like, what a life the guy had. All he did was make dough, and he ended up in jail or something.
Well, as mentioned, I got engaged last month, and you can imagine the engagement ring ads I've been looking at for the last 6 months, and I don't know when that's going to stop. I wish I could reply and say, hey, it's done. I already bought it. You don't have to keep showing me ads on every single platform I'm looking at.
We have a friend, a contributor to the show, whose wife dropped hers in the diamond shattered.
That's not good.
And good friend Audrey's, and the words were, if this is fake, I will kill him. Turns out it wasn't. There actually was a flaw in the darn thing. And I didn't know they could have a flaw in a diamond, but that's how much I know. But all's well that ends well, and everything. It was insured and everything was fine, but she was not happy. So let's hope that doesn't happen on yours, man.
Yeah, let's hope.
I mean, Audrey, get a load of this. This is how these ladies, Matt sends a picture from New York, and Audrey immediately says she's got her finger up. Good. I can see the diamond. It's big enough. She deserves it. Because if I couldn't see the diamond, I couldn't see the diamond in the picture, tell me I need to go to the store and buy something bigger.
Oh, God.
It's, you know, you never know quite what they're thinking about, man. That's what makes it great.
That is what they're thinking about, though.
Well, yeah. Well,
it is.
Anyway, so Russell is I don't, the tariff thing with China, to me, talk about switching pages, it's turning into a kind of a tech war to me. I don't know that that's all that solvable. Now we're starting to do some stuff here, and you know, it's near to my heart. They were all over this Chinese company that makes railroad cars here. And they're the only manufacturer in the U.S. of railroad cars. They got a job for Boston and
they make the Metra cars.
Well, they're making one for Boston right now, and they're making one for I think they were Philly. Not positive, but anyway, they got two jobs going. Whatever the other one is, one of them was the Boston Orange Line, whatever that is. And you know, there's a reason for this, the people here feel that the regulators and the people who do the cars, they basically bleep all over them. I mean, they did it Pullman. They buried Pullman. They buried St. Louis Car. They buried Bud. They buried Boeing with change orders, with, you know, schedules that were impossible to meet. Didn't like this, didn't like that, and all of a sudden you're behind. The Chinese seem to do better with that. They just, look at the change order they did on the Bay Bridge. That was China. It was a Chinese company. And what was, Manny, if you got a second, Google up the Bay Bridge. I'm going to say that the final cost was five times the bid. You could never get away with that. With a U.S. company, you'd put them out of business. China, again, I think you just paid them. There's a lot of reasons why these guys are here, where we make it very easy. And I don't understand if the Chinese don't want to make it easy for our guys over there, just make it a mirror image. But we don't want to do that here. Because we want stuff cheaper, allegedly, on the bid. We want the Chinese to be able to buy Russell Rhodes hot dog stand for four times what it's worth, and then complain that they find out how you made your hot dogs. I mean, we could turn this bus around if we wanted to. That's what I'm concerned about the administration. I don't seem to know. I don't know what they want, Russell. Do you? I mean, it's kind of a shotgun approach to nowhere.
No idea what the solution would be at this point. Which is another way of saying what you just said was, what is it that the Chinese can say that will make us all, you know, move forward and be friends?
And what do we really even want?
Yep.
I mean, we can't.
We don't. I at this point, you know, you hear a very big general statement. We want them to stop, you know, to play fair. Well, what is that? So I think I have an idea of what that means. It basically means, you know, that we want them to. You've often cited the, you know, they get all the plans, the whole Boeing plane, but they only make the tail.
Right, or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and then they, you know, and then they, you know, odds are if we're goofing around on tariffs for the next couple of years, that all of a sudden China's going to be making their own plane.
I think they already are. They've got some in production. I mean, they're hot on the heels of that one.
Okay.
No, so much
it's, but it's kind of it's stuff like that. It's giving some respect to intellectual property, which they just don't.
I would agree.
To the point, like I've actually seen it in the academic world, where if you have a really good idea and you're still developing it, you used to go to a conference and talk about it. Now you don't want to do that because people will take your idea, and there's no. No integrity as far as allowing, as far as not stealing somebody's half-developed idea and beating them to the academic journal on it.
Well, yesterday I cited an article that had to do with how much activity goes out of your iPhone on what you're doing, and according to this article, it was almost all apps that are sending your stuff up. Yelp being the worst offender for some reason. Cited the guy who wrote the article and where I got the information. Matty Weber is our master of all things news and media. How many times today at Fox News, CNBC, anywhere else, will anyone cite where they got a piece of information? I'm going to say none. None, never. Which is the same thing you're saying, Russell.
They're, where I work, they are really big on making sure I do that.
Okay.
Not that I've been bad about it, but they're really big on.
You're a professor, you know, of course they're gonna.
They're where'd you get this from? Where'd you get that from? I mean, it's and if it's like a payoff diagram that I created myself, I actually have to cite it as tab group calculation.
Really?
We're big into making sure everything. We say where everything comes from, which actually is a really good thing. It's a good
but how
they're getting it.
If it's on the internet, people think they can steal it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Oh God, I am about once every month or so, I'll come across an article that somebody has written, and they've yanked they basically have taken the chart that I've created and just put it up there without citing it. There was a whole article. It did that. I had four graphs in an article I wrote, and somebody basically paraphrased everything, but used my charts.
Don't you
and
love
didn't
it?
Give me any credit for it. I see it all the time.
If the real quick, we only got like 30 seconds.
Yep.
If the Fed cuts rates, and we have an ensuing rally, you buy the rally or do you sell it?
I think some smart folks use it as a selling opportunity.
I'm thinking sort of the same way. I am thinking the same.
And I think it might end up being a really short-lived selling opportunity.
Hey, when you come back in town, let me know, because we have to caucus. Our man Jeff Joseph wants to go out with the gang. He's our new commentator, terrific guy with the magazine. And anyway, we've got to get together some night and meet everybody. All right, so fly safe, buddy. SP Futures up $7 now. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.